Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, September 25th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, an update on the Save Our Seniors story from yesterday, Humboldt renews enforcement action on the Yeehaw Commune, Humboldt County Sheriff's marijuana enforcement team busts three illegal grows in Mendocino. So stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
An update on the story aired yesterday regarding Save Our Seniors, SOS, and the Fortuna City Council. The SOS raised concerns over the Fortuna City Council possibly violating the Brown Act yesterday by holding a special closed meeting under the significant threat of litigation exemption. They intended to file a complaint if the closed session went through, though following the results of yesterday's City Council meeting, that statement has been rescinded. KMUD News spoke with Hillary Mosier, the regional manager for the Golden State Manufactured Homeowners League and rent stabilization advocate, for more information about how the City Council meeting went.
The City Council had called a special meeting for a closed session. Prior to the closed session, they allowed public comment. There were about 10 to 12 speakers. Each of us spoke about how dire the situation is, how there are seniors who are having to choose right now between paying their rent and buying medication. And some are in the process of deciding they can't afford to live there anymore and may become homeless. We talked about how this ordinance, it would be the only ordinance that the City of Fortuna had that would pay for itself, because each mobile home resident would be paying $5 a month towards this ordinance to defray administrative expenses. And we talked about how we believed the closed session was a violation of the Brown Act. They just sort of sat there nodding their heads, didn't respond, and then went into closed session. We waited for about an hour, and they came back out, and they announced that they had made no decisions in the closed session, but that they were moving forward with their earlier decision to enact a temporary rent increase moratorium in mobile home parks in the City of Fortuna. And there are three parks in the City of Fortuna that this will apply to. And that is about 268 homes. And they also announced that they were enacting that temporary moratorium until they were able to work out the details of a rent stabilization ordinance. So we were celebrating. We still are celebrating, because before this, at the last meeting, their city manager was still trying to promote a memo of understanding, or an MOU, instead of a rent stabilization ordinance, which the park owner attorney had submitted to them for consideration. So it's a big step in the right direction. We are placing our trust in the city council. We were, during the closed session, actually, we were discussing pivoting to a citizens initiative, but as of the announcement last night, the SOS, Save Our Seniors group in Fortuna, made the decision that they're going to defer for the time being regarding a citizens initiative. And we're also not going to be filing a cure and correct claim against the City Council for a violation of the Brown Act.
The Fortuna City Council will have a rent moratorium in place while they work on creating a rent stabilization ordinance. A rent moratorium would essentially freeze any increases in rent for the time being. Mosier elaborates on why this is a win for SOS.
It's a win for SOS because it tells us that the City Council is setting their sights on developing a rent stabilization ordinance to protect people in Fortuna from park owner gouging. Like, I'll give you an example. Yesterday, I was driving along in Fortuna and realized, oh, there's a mobile home park, and I hadn't been there before. So I drove in, and I started talking to a gentleman there who told me that their park owner, there's about 30 homes there, is now 84 years old, and he's what we refer to as a mom-and-pop owner. So he built the park. He wanted to establish affordable housing for folks in Fortuna many years ago, like 50 years ago. And he's aging out. And in my park in McKinleyville, when the owners died, the heirs sold it to a giant corporation. And that's when we got notices for a $300 a month increase. So even though the other two parks in Fortuna are not owned by corporate gougers, they could be at any moment. And the one park, Royal Crest, that has over 200 seniors in it, is owned by a giant corporation that is gouging the seniors badly. So we are calling it elder financial abuse. And the city council of Fortuna has taken this seriously, and they are taking moves. Their city manager has worked really hard to give them a variety of choices and information about enacting an RSO. And we're putting our faith in them and hoping that they will enact one. And at this point, there's nothing to lose, literally, because they're enacting a temporary rent increase moratorium. So, you know, until the time that they come up with their RSO, the park owner cannot raise the rent. The RSO, the Rent Stabilization Ordinance, will tell them, we're hoping they're going to adopt one just like Humboldt County's, which will limit the park owner to raising the rent no higher than the consumer price index for that year, which is usually around 2.5%. And it will have a cap on it, we're hoping, of probably about 5%. And that will mean that seniors will be able to plan their future. They'll be able to know that the rent is never going to be jacked up so high that not only can they not pay it and have to leave, but if it gets so high, then they can't sell their home. I mean, that's already a crisis at Royal Crest Park in Fortuna. Lots of homes are for sale and not many are selling because the rents at every other park in Humboldt County are cheaper than Royal Crest.
The temporary moratorium will be imposed on Monday, September 29th, and it will be posted on the City Council's website, which is friendlyfortuna.com. Humboldt County's long-running code enforcement against the Yeehaw Commune is entering a final phase. Daniel Mintz reports.
In a Humboldt County Board of Supervisors hearing with a few surprising twists, the long-running code enforcement case against the Yeehaw Commune is resuming an abatement phase. Yeehaw's assortment of alternative housing and alternative water and sewer systems has been on the county's code enforcement radar for years. Located off Quarry Road in the Trinidad area, the 10-acre Yeehaw property's zoning doesn't jibe with its non-code alternative housing. During the September 24th supervisors meeting, Planning Director John Ford said deadlines for applying for a zoning change and permitting have all been missed, and testing of Yeehaw's septic system was done in the wrong location. And there's a new and complicating wrinkle. Ford said the property is now under new ownership, as it's been transferred to a nonprofit organization headed by Yeehaw owner Charles Garth's son. With Yeehaw facing renewed code abatement, Garth told supervisors, as he has for many years, that he wants to work with the county on housing.
I need a new deal. Come on, you guys, I'm doing the right thing. Your director has already stated numerous times that there's no way to build affordable housing. I can build affordable housing all day long till the cows come home. I can build it. Just let me do it, right? You know, we got Evergreen can handle the paperwork, all right? But you know, I'm your man. I can do this. Give me a shovel. Don't take it away.
During a public comment period, Yeehaw residents said there are only about 10 people living at Yeehaw now. They said Garth's approach doesn't fit bureaucratic rigidity and urged the county to provide grants to the nonprofit instead of exploiting the Yeehaw's low-income residents. The new player in the controversy, Alan Ng of Evergreen Nonprofit, proposed directing the amount of back due fines toward, quote, actual cleanup and restoration work. But with the situation persisting for more than two decades, supervisors have lost patience. Supervisor Rex Bone said the county needs to do its job of code enforcement.
I'm getting confused of all the mixed signals. All I do know is there's improper sewage, improper water, and we have given 25 years of code enforcement trying to bring him in line. I mean, I don't know what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again with the same result? Now, I understand that there has been a new RV or bus brought in there in the last month or two. I don't know. They can deny it. So I don't know if it's actually doing what we're saying. But the thing is we need to have to cut the cord, clean it up, and then let, because much like a abated property that somebody buys, because we get them every week, because I just bought an abated property. Can I just not worry about it? No, you have to clean it up to move forward. We make them clean it up.
Supervisors weren't reassured when they heard that Evergreen has no assets and owns no other properties. The cost of cleaning up Yeehaw is estimated to be hundreds of thousands of dollars. Yeehaw is in Supervisor Steve Madrone's district. He's supported an assistive approach to Yeehaw, but noted that Garth is able to pay for lawyers and owns multiple properties in the county. Madrone said if the county doesn't take final action, it's vulnerable to liability and there's no more leeway left.
I just wanted to be really clear. I mean, I have gone to bat for this community for my entire 6.5 years up here as a board member over and over again. And promises keep being made, but then they don't get fulfilled. So, I mean, there are limits to our ability to trust and believe that these things are actually going to happen if we get more time and stuff.
With that, supervisors declined any further extensions and voted to direct code enforcement staff to issue notices of violation and abatement to Yeehaw's new owner. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
On September 23rd, deputies with the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office Marijuana Enforcement Team served search warrants in the Island Mountain area of Mendocino in an illegal cannabis cultivation investigation. During the search, deputies discovered and eradicated thousands of cannabis plants, hundreds of pounds of bud and shake, and found pesticides that are restricted for use in California. KMUD News spoke with Summer Hansen, Public Information Officer for the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, for more information.
On September 23, 2025, deputies with the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office Marijuana Enforcement Team served three search warrants in the Island Mountain area of northern Mendocino County as part of an illegal cannabis cultivation investigation. The Trinity County Sheriff's Office and the Butte County Sheriff's Office assisted in the service of the warrants. Three parcels were investigated during the service of the warrants. The parcel did not have the required county permit or state license to cultivate cannabis commercially. During the service of the warrants, deputies eradicated about 6,259 growing cannabis plants. They also seized and destroyed more than 612 pounds of cannabis bud and shake. Assisting environmental agencies found chemicals restricted for use in California. These included pesticides such as imidacloprid, which is highly toxic to pollinators, and myclobutanil. Both are listed on California's groundwater protection list. Investigators also found bromethylene, a neurotoxic rodenticide known to kill local wildlife. All of these pesticides are prohibited for use in cannabis cultivation by the California Department of Pesticide Regulation. No subjects were contacted on scene. This is an ongoing investigation into those responsible.
Anyone with information about this case or related criminal activity is encouraged to call the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office at 707-445-7251 or the Sheriff's Office Crime Tip Line at 707-268-2539. In state news, Pacific Power in NorCal gets a B on Sierra Club Dirty Truth Report. Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
The fifth annual Dirty Truth Report from the Sierra Club just came out, and it gives Pacific Power in Northern California a grade of B when it comes to the clean energy transition. The report analyzes progress toward clean energy among 75 large companies. Pacific Power serves Del Norte, Siskiyou, and Modoc counties, along with parts of Oregon and Washington. It's owned by Pacific Corp, which also runs Rocky Mountain Power, serving Idaho, Wyoming, and Utah. The sister company received a D grade on the report. Rose Monahan with the Sierra Club says Pacific Corp's integrated resource plan for Rocky Mountain Power plus California shows they have no plans to procure more clean energy resources in the short term.
Coal plant retirements have been removed from the plan. The coal plants operate indefinitely. They plan to continue operating their gas plants indefinitely. And so it's really not the type of portfolio that you would expect a utility serving California residents to put forward.
Pacific Power did not respond to a request for comment. On its website, Pacific Corp touts its Blue Sky program, which charges customers $1.95 each month to help the company purchase wind and solar energy. Pacific Corp's parent company, Berkshire Hathaway, owns several other utilities, including one in Nevada. California Governor Gavin Newsom just signed a bill to make it easier to buy and sell electricity on the grid linking the western states. Monahan says that will affect California's goal to achieve 100% renewable energy by 2045.
PacifiCorp is a very big player in the West. As part of the regional energy mix, they're contributing a pretty dirty grid that California would be buying from.
Many power companies are forecasting a big increase in demand for power in the next few years as data centers proliferate. At the same time, the Trump administration has canceled billions in clean energy tax breaks and is pulling federal support for offshore wind. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, Ukrainian president says drone strikes and AI threaten global security. KPFA's Anthony Perazzo reports.
As the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky has pushed for his country's independence from Russia since he was elected in 2019. With Russia's invasion in early 2024, he has had to lead his country through a large-scale military conflict against Russia's much larger military. In speaking to the United Nations General Assembly, he aims to gain support for his peace efforts from other countries, especially the United States. Zelensky has already offered a ceasefire and a summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin. However, Moscow reportedly has issues with some proposals, and peace still seems a distant possibility. Zelensky insists the war is Russia's fault and decries many of their actions, like the abduction of Ukrainian children and the bombing of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. Zelensky says life in Ukraine had undeniably changed as a result of the war.
To protect lives, Ukraine builds underground schools and underground hospitals. To protect lives, we have to spend more on protecting power stations from drone and missile attacks than on building sports facilities or cultural infrastructure. Ukrainian farmers are learning how to protect their equipment from Russia's FPV drone strikes, and for them, that challenge is far greater than climate change. Russia's war has put us in this situation.
Both Ukraine and Russia have been using drone strikes as a part of their military strategies. Zelensky says Ukraine has had no choice but to use this tactic.
Ukraine doesn't have the big fat missiles dictators love to show off in parades, but we do have drones that can fly up to 2,000-3,000 kilometers. We had no choice but to build them to protect our right to life. Control over the sea used to depend on having a big navy. Ukraine doesn't have a big fleet, but we succeeded. In the Black Sea, we pushed what's left of the Russian navy into remote base. And we did it with sea drones. That's how we protect our ports and maritime trade routes, because Russia has left us no other choice.
Concerns have grown that the conflict could spread beyond Ukraine. European countries have rebuked Russia for provocations, including drones landing in Poland. Zelensky warns about artificial intelligence making the problem with drones worse, putting a tremendous amount of power in very few hands and compromising global security.
Now companies are already working on drones that can shoot down other drones, and it's only a matter of time, not much, before drones are fighting drones, attacking critical infrastructure and targeting people all by themselves, fully autonomous and no human involved, except the few who control AI systems. If there is no strong platform for international security, will there be any place left on Earth that's still safe for people? We need global rules now for how AI can be used in weapons, and this is just as urgent as preventing the spread of nuclear weapons.
Some nuclear bombs are designed to be small and light enough to be carried around easily, like by a single soldier deployed in the field, which is a scenario that could have a devastating impact on the region and beyond. For KPFA News, I'm Anthony Perazzo.
Trump blasts Europe, climate change, in longest speech of U.S. president at U.N. General Assembly, KPFA's Christina Onnestad reports.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres opened the 80th session of the UN's General Assembly, urging urging multilateralism and global cooperation to uplift human life. This in the face of multiple wars, starvation, and climate catastrophes.
When for every dollar invested to support our core work to build peace, the world spends $750 on weapons of war. This is not only unsustainable, it is indefensible. In this moment of crisis, the United Nations has never been more essential. The world needs our unique legitimacy, our convening power, our vision to unite nations, to bridge divides and confront the challenges before us.
Your countries are going to hell.
President Donald Trump took center stage and shared a different vision during his display of diplomacy at the UN, carrying the MAGA message to world leaders.
You need strong borders and traditional energy sources if you are going to be great again.
He blamed the UN for ruining nations in its support of refugees and immigrants in this thinly veiled xenophobic language.
Your countries are being ruined. The United Nations is funding an assault on Western countries and their borders. In 2024, the UN budgeted $372 million in cash assistance to support an estimated 624,000 migrants journeying into the United States.
He called climate change,
it's the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world.
Then assailed United Nations scientific experts on climate change who make predictions, saying some nations would be wiped off the map by now. But that's not happening.
They were made by stupid people that have cost their countries fortunes and given those same countries no chance for success. If you don't get away from this green scam, your country is going to fail.
The contrast, the divide, couldn't be broader. Secretary General Guterres called fossil fuels a losing battle and urged nations to scale up funding for those least responsible for the climate crisis, but suffering the most from its impacts. He noted the rise in renewables as a solution to climate catastrophes.
Last year, almost all new power capacity came from renewables, and the investment is surging. Renewables are the cheapest and fastest source of new power. They create jobs, drive growth, shield economies from volatile oil and gas markets, connect the unconnected, and can free us from the tyranny of fossil fuels.
And he urged a scale-up in investments in renewables. Whereas President Trump promoted his slogan, Drill, Baby, Drill, and assailed the Paris Climate Accord, he further questioned the efficacy of the United Nations, saying he alone negotiated 7 peace deals.
I ended 7 wars, dealt with the leaders of each and every one of these countries, and never even received a phone call from the United Nations offering to help in finalizing the deal. All I got from the United Nations was an escalator that on the way up stopped right in the middle.
But media reports say that's an exaggeration. Most of the deals didn't end fighting or tensions between the countries on Trump's list, including Congo and Rwanda, Azerbaijan and Armenia. India says it struck a peace deal with Pakistan on its own, and tensions still long simmered with no changes in Kosovo. Trump then hailed his bombing of Iran, obliterating its nuclear facilities, as part of his peace diplomacy that ended fighting between Iran and Israel.
There is no more serious danger to our planet today than the most powerful and destructive weapons ever devised by man, of which the United States, as you know, has many. Just as I did in my first term, I've made containing these threats a top priority, starting with the nation of Iran.
He then took aim at Venezuela.
To destroy Venezuelan terrorists and trafficking networks led by Nicolas Maduro, to every terrorist thug smuggling poisonous drugs into the United States of America, please be warned that we will blow you out of existence. That's what we're doing. We have no choice.
And he assailed the more than 150 nations that have recognized Palestine as a state, including allies who made the recent announcement to do so, France, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, and Portugal. Trump said it was a hindrance to peace and urged the world not to forget Hamas's October 7th massacre in southern Israel in 2023. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
And in National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A resource guide to help small and medium-sized governments in the Great Lakes region adapt to climate change has been published. Chuck Kornbach reports that some tribal communities in the area are already trying to reduce problems caused by higher temperatures and additional flooding.
The guide is from the International Joint Commission, or IJC, which helps implement the Boundary Waters Treaty of 1909 between the U.S. and Canada. Liz Kirkwood of the IJC's Water Quality Board says climate change has brought more severe storms, loss of ice cover, and extreme temperatures to much of North America, including the Great Lakes region.
In 2024, extreme weather disasters cost the eight Great Lakes states more than $13 billion U.S. dollars combined. Some of the costliest disasters happened in the last 5 years.
While debate continues over how to reduce air pollution that contributes to climate change, the IJC has published a guide aimed at helping small and medium-sized governments adapt to the new temperatures and heavier rainfalls. Charlie Rasmussen of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission says his organization welcomes the sharing of best practices, funding ideas, and other strategies. He says the commission's 11 Ojibwe member tribes in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota are already taking steps, sometimes in collaboration with local, state, or federal agencies. One project being Ishkade. That's using prescribed or controlled fires on land next to water.
They help maintain and reestablish native species that do the best job at holding the soil and able to resist, you know, some of these severe precipitation events.
Rasmussen says other tribes are putting in larger roadside culverts to reduce highway damage from flooding and to help wildlife move. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
This academic year in North Dakota, eighth graders are getting new textbooks that'll educate them about the five tribes that are found within the state. As Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire reports, this is a series that's being revised for the first time in 30 years.
Originally, four texts and a journal were printed between 1995 and 2002. Much of the content came from interviews with tribal elders in the 1970s. This new series will still feature books on the Spirit Lake Oyate, Standing Rock Oyate, Turtle Mountain Ojibwe, and the three affiliated tribes or Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation, or MHA. But a new edition on the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate has been added. And each tribe had exclusive editorial control over their respective book, which included more recent historical information.
It's so important that Indigenous peoples are represented in a contemporary sense.
Sashay Shetler is an MHA citizen and the assistant director of North Dakota's Office of Indigenous and Multicultural Education. She recalls classmates growing up who thought Native people were extinct.
And then you have people getting elected into positions, and if you have somebody thinking that Indigenous peoples don't exist, they're going to make policies that aren't bettering our communities for everyone.
5% of North Dakota's population is Native American. Nick Asbury is a former employee of the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction who has remained active in promoting the books.
It's important that we have the platform for the nations to tell their own story because kids are smart. They know when something is authentic and when it's not.
An original overview entitled Journey to Understanding, An Introduction to North Dakota Tribes, is still part of the set. Besides eighth graders, people can download the set for free or order a published copy online. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Patricia Tinkler, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Suzanne Potter, Anthony Perazzo, Christina Onnestad, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2222. 2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Are you passionate about your community? Looking to report on what's happening around Mendocino? KMUD News is looking for stringer reporters from the Mendocino area to cover local Mendocino stories that matter. Whether you're a seasoned journalist or just eager to learn, we'll help you get started. You'll get training, support, and a chance to amplify real voices from your community. If you're interested, email news@kmud.org for more information. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.